Michelle.
She'll be late. Yeah, she's gonna be in front of us off Fairfield.
And Ashley says we're gonna be done by 5:30. Did I hear you say that?
Yeah, you hear lots of things.
That's funny, I was thinking I needed a hearing aid.
All right, let's see if, well, let's get going if we can. Do you want to call us to order by calling the roll?
Sure. Marcy Edelman?
Oh, here, present.
Michelle Alcedo?
She will be here.
Michael Costa?
I'm unsure. I mean, based on his Facebook page, he's not in town.
Scott Heisuka?
Here.
Ashley McCumber?
Here.
Perry Lang? Koshik Roy?
Here.
And Molly Steiner?
Here.
Perry did show up last week for what he thought was a task force meeting. It turned out to be the housing. So I guess that counts, right?
Who showed up? Perry?
Yeah.
Oh, he showed up. I always say that counts.
Exactly.
That always, because when I do that, I want it to count.
It doesn't look like we have anyone with us today, so public comment is open and closed. Looking at our agenda today, just run down real quick to make sure that we've got everything on here that people want to talk about. We just need to touch base on what will hopefully be our new timeline. Michael was going to lead us through a discussion, I thought, on the aging and community bucket and what are the components and who's going to pick up what components. So we might have to organize ourselves around that today. I wanted to just talk briefly about veterans issues and then supporting caregivers is something that's still out there. I wanted to make sure that if there's something we should be doing in addition to that. I think by the end, we just need to confirm our meeting schedule based on our new timeline. Is there anything missing from this agenda? Maybe we'll look back very quickly at any of the remaining priorities that don't seem to be fitting in anywhere else right now.
So when is the next full task force meeting?
It would be our regular time. What is it, the second Tuesday?
November 12th.
So the day after Veterans Day.
And is that for 3 hours?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's a long one.
And that's the one where Tom and I will present the...
I would think, yeah.
Yeah.
I think
okay.
that we have said that basically your recommendations are ready to be discussed fully, yours, and I think that we're going to continue to work on cultural competence for a little bit longer and not bring those up in November, maybe December.
We're trying to connect with Scott. Supervisors Reader and Campos to get some feedback from them.
Okay.
And we met with the DPH.
To get feedback on...
Just if there's any mechanisms that are available in the political process that could help.
Cultural
competency.
In general, for all the different cultural competencies?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, great.
The overarching.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you the point person on that? Because
yes,
Tom and I need to work.
Michelle and I are kind of co.
Oh, okay, because I didn't hear back from you and Michelle when I sent you the Alzheimer thing, the case study, and asked for your feedback about what next around cultural competency.
I don't recall seeing that. It doesn't mean I didn't get it.
Right. That's okay. Well, let's talk after and we'll figure out how to work together.
That'd be great.
Because I know that we'll all want to be working on it.
Hi there. Good. And then I won't be able to present November 12th. I will not be at the task force meeting.
Oh, so you can't be there. So you would want to go up for December.
December.
So
yes.
I'll mention to Bill that you guys are ready.
We're ready.
And on dementia and Alzheimer's, and we'll hold on that and the others. But that'll be what he can bring forth.
I will do December then.
All right. Thank you, Michael. I was trying to figure out if you had told me you were going to be here or not. So I'm glad you're here.
Oh yeah.
Bill has. It will be asking Supervisors Campos and Weiner to extend our report deadline. I'm not sure where he is with that right now, but basically I would be surprised if there was a problem with that. And so we were really targeting ourselves to actually have a written report and a presentation by January, and I think he's asking for 2 more months. So that, I actually think that's wise because, you know, we're about to enter into this crazy season, as they would call it. And this will allow us the chance to keep doing our work, but really get very intense in January to finalize these reports. So does anybody have questions about that?
I've spoken to Steve Kava, Ann Hinton, and Shireen, and also Teresa Sparks about extending it. Nobody has a problem. Everybody's fine. So.
And not only that, but also I think Bill might have said some dates for February and March also. So we also have space and personnel reserved through March.
Okay.
And Scott's okay with it.
Oh, you know that? Okay. Yeah. If we were asking for 6 more months, then I could see someone questioning that. But really, it's more of a kind of it's a calendar issue, I think, more than anything else. That's good news. So it gives us a little bit more time. Unless people have any further questions about that, then I think we can just move on to our next agenda item, which is really talking about all the various components of aging and community. And Michael, you had kind of organized us a little bit around the topic, and so I'm just wondering if we could use some work time. We have a pretty good amount of time on our agenda set aside for carving our path through that whole aging and community, what used to be known as aging in place. Bucket.
Yeah, sure. I wondered, did you guys talk about scheduling through the end of the year and meetings and all that?
We were going to do that at the end.
Oh, at the end, okay. Okay, great. Sure, so I mean, I one of the things that I had these kind of two areas that I really wanted to focus on because they seem like, as you look in the literature and you look around, you sort of see them as two glaring areas, and one is this whole idea of enhancing enrollment in existing benefit programs. And we talked a little bit about that. This is interesting. But the other area is just this whole idea of aging in place, aging in community, because it is clearly an issue that is facing us all as we grow, as we get older and all that. And I guess we need to talk about how we refer to it. In the literature reviews I run across, it's always referred to as aging in place. So, but I understand that, you know, there's an aging in community kind of movement out there, to rename that concept. And so at some point we might want to just decide what we're going to call it. It's a little broader. It's a somewhat different concept when you think about aging in place versus aging in community. And I think it would be helpful if we just all get on the same page and sort of have a mutual understanding on what that is and what we want to call it.
Yeah, does anyone have a comment on why the change in language and why aging in community is being more accessible now than, quote, aging in place? I mean, I kind of have my thoughts, but I haven't dived down on it. I just know that that's a shift that's occurring. I mean, I think aging in place really kind of refers to someone is in a place and you try to keep them there. And aging in community really broadens that concept to understand the continuum of care that people have in a environment or a community, and understands that there are various people move through various places in a community, from both private settings to assisted living to nursing to what have you. But you may have a broader understanding of it as well.
Well, actually, aging in place has been around for quite a while. Actually, under Mayor Willie Brown, they started to talk in San Francisco about the need for, that whole issue around Laguna Honda. How could we keep people aging in their homes, which is where most people want to be, and it's also much more financially viable for the city and the state to do. So that's when I first became aware of it, was when the city under Mayor Brown started to focus on aging in place. And that aging in place really means aging in your home and bringing services in. Mm-hmm. But in the last few years, about, I don't know, 10 years, maybe a decade or so, aging in community is another term that's come up. And what that refers to is, well, you know, okay, you're going to age in your home, age in place, but oftentimes you can just get isolated. So the idea is to broaden that to aging in community, and that means communities. I mean, people belong to different communities. So you get the village concept, which started in Boston, and Beacon Hill is a neighborhood, a fairly affluent neighborhood in Boston, where there were a lot of people were getting old in these really lovely brick homes. And, I know because I'm from Boston. and they all knew each other, and it's a quaint little neighborhood. So they got together and they said, well, let's really formalize our ability to help each other and call ourselves a village. So they eventually made themselves a 501(c). So that sort of expanded, you know, from one person being in their home to a neighborhood. But community can be a virtual community, community can be a neighborhood, community can be a city. And so you can see how the idea keeps expanding in terms of finally you get to livable communities, which is something about cities and states and so on. So the idea is that it's a great idea to keep have people stay at home, to age at home, and to bring services in, but oftentimes, again, the problem is people get isolated, and they're not able to take care of themselves in their homes or bring the services in or access them. The people need help navigating the long-term care system. And so it takes a village for people to get to age well. And so it's really about interdependency on increasingly larger systems of people, not just care, but systems of people, of networks of people, and not just formal, like assisted living or nursing homes. So I don't know, that's kind of a broad stroke.
And does it ever have a connotation that relates to LGBT communities? I mean, because that was a question that Mark, as I began to read more about it, does it also refer Asian and LGBT community?
Well,
does it
aging
have that connotation, or
well, aging in any community. So yes, it has. It means LGBT. I mean, the idea of a village is aging in community, right?
Yeah. And building a community around people.
And building a community around affinity or propinquity, around something that you have in common.
So it looks like the argument for using that term rather than aging in place is it is broader. It does define a larger, richer context and many different scenarios. And so.
Well, I think more than that, though, Michael, actually, to the point is aging in place for us is not a good thing for our community because we tend to not have children and to live alone and to not have partners. So we already have a tendency to get isolated.
Yeah.
So aging in community is really, it's more that. That's why I've been talking about it in the last couple of years, because that's what we have, that's what we're here for. That's why we're all here, is aging in community.
Right, and that's why, thank you for supporting where I'm going, but I'd really like to make the argument that we use that term, aging in community, because it does really capture a richness that the aging in place concept doesn't capture.
But I would add to that, based on our own unique demographics.
Marcy?
But I'm just saying another reason to use it is because
And in the world of aging, that's where the trend is moving toward aging community in terms of the lexicon.
Okay, the trouble is all the research I look at is all aging in place. So I wanted to explicitly have this discussion so that we could come together and have an agreement about it. And we can make that definition as broad as we were agreeing on it,
but we're agreeing on it for different reasons. We're adding, not in conflict with each other. But they're adding to each other.
Right. Okay,
so I think we're all on the same page. I'm making a very simple point, and we're getting off on this stuff.
But, we're getting off but, the subject?
We're all in agreement then, right?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Good. So I think it's important to establish this at the start, just so we have a shared understanding of the complexity of what we're talking about, because that has implications. Now let's go into where we go from here. It has implications for, once we conceptualize it that broadly, we really are talking about a whole range of recommendations that are much broader than any one of our subject matter areas, whether it's housing or healthcare or social services. So I wanted to propose, and that's really what was contained in the document I sent out, that we kind of together think about this as a series of interventions or recommendations across different subject matter, different policy areas. And that was the next thing I wanted to bring up, and I wanted to see what you guys thought about that.
What you sent out?
I have one copy, but
I didn't see it.
Yeah, it's all in the attachments. Oh no, you didn't get it. You know why you didn't get it? Because you're not part of the agent and policy group, or you weren't part of it.
Okay.
Do you have the
group of us who agreed to follow up on this topic?
Oh.
And then we got extended and we said, we'll just deal with it at this meeting.
I wonder if I sent it to Tarnay then.
I
apologize.
Folks.
Could we get copies of this, do you think?
Sure.
Right now?
I can go ahead and make copies if someone has it.
Approaching in place. Sure.
Yeah, can we make a copy of that, especially if you, I have a rather poorly printed version.
Yeah.
Could we make copies of that, and can we defer conversation? Can we go to something else and come back to it once we have the copies?
And then could you also send me a Word version of this document?
Can I?
Yeah.
Well, no, I have to send it to you in PDF, but I'll send it to you in PDF.
Okay. Do you have a Word version, or?
This is just a professional thing. When you send Word projects out, you usually send it in a PDF format.
Okay, I ask because normally everything discussed here we have to put into the minutes, so the PDF I can't actually put into the minutes.
You can't?
No.
Let's talk about it later.
Sure, no problem.
All right. So we'll table this until we get that document back, and then we'll walk through it and so forth. So while he's doing that, let's move on.
Okay.
The next item on the agenda was to discuss veterans issues. It was my hope to follow up with the person that Bevan Duffy had referred me to, but we just did not have an opportunity to set up a meeting. And once I got a date, was that every time I tried to email her to ask for a meeting, she said, call me. And I'm like, I'm emailing you. Can't you just look at your calendar? But ultimately, I want to set up a meeting and to find out from the VA's point of view, now that we have these new laws that protect people's marital status and relationship rights, and they're recognizing relationships, how does that change how people who are currently veterans are treated within the system, and what should we be rolling into potentially your bucket about connecting people to services? Where are the gaps, and how do we take that? Because I don't think it specifically needs to stand out there on its own, but there are probably some pronounced things that they would like to see change that could be rolling into getting people access to the services that they already should have. So I just haven't carried it any further, but I'm happy to have us have a conversation about what people perceive we should be putting in that right now. This is actually we've had such structured meetings, now we have open space to kind of discuss these together. I don't think that's a bad thing.
Right.
So anybody have thoughts?
I don't really know anything very much, I'm sorry to say, about the veterans system and how LGBT folks utilize it or not. I mean, is it too late in the game to have someone come talk to us about that?
Well, this is the person over at, that Bevan said was Bobby the person. Rosenthal. Yeah.
Who is it?
Bobby Rosenthal.
Roberta.
Yeah. And Bobby
Schreiber.
Rosenthal.
And Bevan, basically, when we met with him, we were considering just taking veterans issues off the scope, and then he said, no, I think it's really important. It's really hitting us in the face here in the homeless work, and I really think you need to go talk to them and find out what some of the interventions might be before you take it off the table. So we haven't done that yet.
And she's at the VA?
Yeah. Because I just, with such a large percentage of the people in the survey being veterans, and I think so many people came here, basically they were either stationed somewhere in California and ended up here and never left.
In that older age category.
And they don't have the same, obviously we have a new and emerging, acceptance of LGBT folks, or at least lesbian and gay folks. In the military, but these folks don't have that experience at all, and they may or may not feel comfortable in that system.
I know a lot of the community members that I work with do not access the VA services for a variety of different reasons, but I know I do run across many community members who do not access VA services, and I feel like from many of them it's discrimination at the time when they were accessing services many years ago. So I'm not quite sure how to approach this,
Yeah, I had a conversation with someone that you said, with Molly.
At the
from
VA?
Source of Plowshares. No, Source of Plowshares, actually. We talked more about the psychosocial issues versus the policy, changing the laws issues at the VA. But I didn't bring my notes with me today, but it was a very interesting conversation, and it really teases out more of the mental health piece, so I agree that we could actually bolt into more of the aging community.
And they're pretty much dealing with a very difficult population, right? They're dealing with people with severe challenges, both homeless and mental health challenges, so they're seeing a specific band of issues at Shores of Plowshare and remedying those things through housing and support system. But we just have to follow up on this conversation and see from the VA's point of view what should they should be doing to both lift the stigma that people still have for the VA, as well as, you know, helping people understand what they have access to. Mm-hmm. And there's two parts of it, I guess. There's the part that says, here's the actual veteran, and getting them comfortable with services, access to service. And then there's the family component of that has never been recognized. And what is the VA going to do now? Mm-hmm. Where are they in terms of these relationships and benefits?
Mm-hmm. Right. When you talk to the person from Service of Pleasures, did they mention anything about any research that's been done in this area?
He's a therapist, a licensed marriage and family therapist, so he was talking more about the mental health issues that they're presenting in groups and accessing, you know, the services at other organizations and agencies. So no, not yet.
Okay.
But I wonder if the VA here in San Francisco isn't. I mean, what if they come back with, well, we're not really doing much? What are we gonna?
Well, that's why I was hoping to get kind of an advocate internally to say, you know, these are the short things that you could put out there that would be very helpful.
Right.
The reason I'm asking is because the Menlo Park VA is doing a lot. So
really?
If you wanted to, I did a training there last year, and they're actually quite advanced. I was actually surprised that they were doing so much. And
that's what their main office, right?
The Menlo Park?
Yeah.
Menlo Park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I believe, go ahead.
Go ahead, no.
I was just going to say, I believe a former program director of the Outreach to Elders program at New Leaf Services.
Is at the VA.
Is at the VA.
Yeah, he was at
Tim Ramsey.
Right.
Okay.
And so they're doing a lot there. They have their first, I think I mentioned this. Why am I feeling like a...
No, you did. You actually did.
They have their first support group. People come from all over. But, you know, kind of what piggybacking on what Scott said, yes, a lot of our community members do not comfortable in our VA system.
If you know a guy there, what's his name?
Tim Ramsey.
Oh, Tim Ramsey's
there.
Oh, yeah. Maybe he could write out a short, you know, what the challenges are, what the recommendations are, some short brief, so that we could understand from his, because he would be educating us.
Well, he lives in the city now, so I could ask. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we're still open to having people, I could just hang in and see if he'd come.
Either that or just a group of us or whatever works. But would you follow up on that and basically get their take? I'll follow up with Roberta. And you, I know you've talked to Sword and Sprouse here, but have you actually talked to them specifically?
Just to say that we wanted to. Yeah.
So why don't you hold that one? You can hold Menlo and I'll hold this. And we'll, between the three of those things, we'll figure out if people are saying completely different things or the same things. My guess is that by the time we finish the list, we'll compare them and they'll be very similar.
It'd be great to see if they've already, if there are some model programs there that we can point to. Mm.
Would it be ethical for me, because I have one community member in mind, could I speak to that community member and ask what the challenges
that person's experiences
and why they don't?
Yes.
Okay.
That would be great.
But here's the other question I have, because there are lots of veterans who don't use VAs across the country, regardless of whether or not they're LGBT. Mm-hmm. And so my question would be, I think I know the answer to this, do LGBT veterans use the services less frequently?
Right.
Or are there special and unique barriers? I mean, we know the answers to this, right? But still, I mean, you know, we can't just assume because someone doesn't access the VA that it's because they're LGBT.
Are they able to be out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I guess the one thing I'd recommend too is that somebody kind of follow up and see if there are any studies that are done, and this riffs off of what you were saying, at the sort of the national level or national groups just looking at VA, use of VA services by LGBTs, just so we cross that dot too. So it's kind of what you.
I wonder if there's anything out there that would be.
Yeah.
But you should look. You never know.
Sage or somebody. I don't know.
Yeah.
Somebody who does senior LGBT research.
Any other things? Because those are three things we said. We talked about looking at studies. You talked about talking to one a veteran is kind of getting more of a qualitative feedback on one person's experience. And I would say if you know other people, talk to them. What are you hearing out there? So we're going to proceed and try to get these things done in the next, let's say, 30 days. Can we try to do it this month? November?
You know, I was just thinking, there's that LGBT veterans group of the war.
Right. Yeah, John.
Is that, right, no.
Alexander Hamilton.
Right.
Yeah, what's John's last name? That's the head of that.
Is that who you're thinking of, Molly?
Yeah, yeah.
But you know,
but there are definitely some old timers in that group.
Yes, for sure. Yeah.
You know, I'd like to make a recommendation. Tom and I researched an area, looked into Alzheimer's dementia and LGBT caregivers, and there's really almost nothing. And so I did about a whole bunch of informational interviews. And then I condensed them, if you saw them in the case study that we did, then we used those informational interviews and dispersed it throughout the narrative that we wrote. It was very powerful. So that's why I would recommend that when you talk to these people, that you actually interview them, do an informational interview, and have consistently same questions like, mm-hmm. What are the challenges? What are the recommendations? What have you seen as working?
Did you have a template that you used that you thought was useful, or was it specific to Alzheimer's dementia?
It was just, I made it up. You know, I made one up. But yep. I mean, I'm just sharing that with you.
Yep.
And it seemed to fit the subject. And then you can refer to that in an addendum. I mean, we're in these areas where there is little or no research. It doesn't mean we still can't utilize the expertise that's out there to help us in writing up our recommendations.
Yeah, well, and it constitutes qualitative research.
Yes, it does. So, yeah.
I have a set I'm using for MHSA.
Pardon me?
I have a set of questions I'm using for the MHSA.
Okay.
Yeah, could you ship those around and maybe we can agree to them? We can all just use them when we talk to people. We'll make sure we at least ask those questions, including others that we want to ask, but a certain base of questions would be great. And I'll use them when talking to Roberta. And I'm going to add to my list talking to the head of the veterans group, because I know I met him. I've got his number and card somewhere. I can just call him. And I see him all the time in the Castro, so I can ask him to sit down with me. Well, I think we have to set it. And did we set some dates? Did we clock dates on the calendar?
I think you just confirmed this one, and then we're going to go as a see-as-we-go basis.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Yeah, we're going to have to figure out based on the new schedule of meetings. So is there anything else on the veterans item? If not, we'll close that one and go back to aging in community and let Michael kind of lead us through the questions and how we might work on assignments moving forward.
Okay, and now you should have in front of you a document I produced at the beginning of the month, and I had sent it to people who had had an interest, who'd indicated an interest in aging in place and working on it. And as I kind of mentioned, it was what I remember. I sent it to the people who I remember from that meeting, you know, had indicated an interest, and I kind of apologize for not everybody having this document, so if we can take a minute and go through it, I think it's probably worthwhile. And I wanted to sort of think of it in terms of, well, what are the kind of goals and objectives and outcomes we would be looking for in this area, and have a conversation about that. Again, the interest is sort of so we're all on the same page, because I think now we have a we have a shared definition of aging and community, which we can work from. And so this goes through an outline, and it's intended as a discussion document to talk about the goals and objectives of this area, to look at kind of some of the outcomes and products that we would produce, and then on the back page, what are the focus areas? And I took an initial kind of cut at assigning people to the subject matter areas, again, based on what I could remember about the meeting we had and what people's interests were. And then talking about the format for the recommendations in this area, and then something about the timeline. So this is intended to be something we can do now together, and I think that'll help us flesh out the area a little more. So first of all, in terms of the goals and objectives, I basically said our basic goal is developing policy and program recommendations that ensure that LGBT adults over 60 years of age have the ability to access a comprehensive and coordinated continuum of services that facilitate aging in community. How does that sound? Does that sound like a good jumping off point? Is there anything that's left out or anything that we should think about? The emphasis here is on a comprehensive and coordinated service delivery plan, which, you know, has its challenges. It will have its challenges, but if we start from that premise, at least we can keep that in mind as we develop the recommendations. You know, how do these recommendations fit into a comprehensive approach and a coordinated approach? Because to some extent, the success of an aging in place recommendation depends on its ability to, you know, have a symmetry and a symbiosis with everything else that we were recommending. And so at the minimum, the recommendations would address, and again, these are buckets, you know, social and support services, as well as educational intergenerational opportunities that help build community and social networks, thereby decreasing isolation and invisibility. So this is, in some sense, the most amorphous bucket, because how you define social services really depends on, you know, the comprehensiveness of the bucket. But, you know, we want to recognize social opportunities. We want to include educational opportunities. They should involve an intergenerational approach where possible. And we're really trying to build a network. And the ultimate outcome is to decrease isolation and invisibility, because we know that that's a big issue, and that what one of the principal impediments to aging in community is the fact of the isolation and the invisibility and the depression that that actually leads to. So how did
I mean, that? This bucket seems fine to me.
And that's the most, in some sense, the most amorphous bucket. The second is a short-term case management services that would offer support and assistance in times of need. I kind of informally think of this as I've fallen down and I can't get up category, which will happen to everyone as they get older. And it's sort of what happens when you need assistance in the short term. And having some case management services included in that.
Now, yeah, and I actually started, for some reason, the word navigating is just really resonating for me, because sometimes it's not, because people go off into a land of what case management means. And what you're really talking about is that in as we age, we tend to find ourselves in a crisis and then don't know how to navigate that crisis and connect to the things that are going to keep us in community at that juncture. I think that, for me, what resonates with this, less about the case management per se, that's part of, some people need that intensity, but there's just a lot of people who just don't know where the next step mm-hmm. is.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They just don't know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And to be able to have like that navigation for them is really important. So it's almost INR, but it's a little bit kind of between information referral and case management, a little bit more hand-holding.
A little bit stronger than
right.
INR,
right.
Yeah. But not quite.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, Shanti's mm-hmm. folks are called care navigators.
Yeah, yeah. I like the word navigator.
Right.
Nice. Yeah, we use it too.
Yeah. No, and it's very much part of ACA, is right. the whole navigator
it's,
function.
It's a really good term. We
And we can, you know, as we kind of work on the actual services that we're going to make recommendation on, that will help us define case management or navigation, you know, because that's going to be something that will come out of how where we go, how we define that. One is recommendations should really understand that this is a multidimensional intervention. It's going to involve healthcare. It might involve fiscal, you know, income assistance. It would involve housing and other services. Certainly, we recognize the role of housing as a principal issue in San Francisco, and that we are going to try to ensure ongoing access in those multiple dimensions. And that should be part of this. And then there's a cultural competency piece, the training of mainstream providers to understand and address the needs of LGBT seniors. It seems to me that this, again, is part of our general plan for, you know, world domination, that we want everything we do to sort of increase the cultural competency of the providers that are actually helping us age in community. And by the way, just as a quick sidebar, I was at Whitman Walker in Washington, D.C. on Friday meeting with a woman who's in charge of all navigation services for Whitman Walker, but she's also, they won the contract to train all the navigators in Washington, D.C. So it's 20 different nonprofit agencies that are all going to enroll people in ACA and into other services. And it's people of faith community, it's all kinds of different groups. And one of their, you know, sub-goals in all this is to instill this cultural competency with every group they train. So, you know, and she says, it's very interesting when we're dealing with very religious groups, and we have, you know, LGBT case examples. But again, and it's a little bit of a sidebar, but I thought that they had an interesting approach in how they were really instilling this in whatever they did with mainstream providers. So we should think about that too.
Can I ask you a question about that? Just to stay with that sidebar for a second. Instead of cultural competency training then in terms of a nationwide program like that, do they talk about diversity training instead?
What they're doing, because their contract, I mean, they're operating within the confines of a contract, is to actually train everybody, all the different nonprofit groups in the Washington, D.C. metro area that are enrolling people in ACA. So I don't know what the limit, I don't know how broad that is, what that
entails. But train them in what?
In enrolling people into ACA. But they're instilling this cultural competency component. It's not part of the contract, I don't think, except that there probably is language in the contract that says, you know, in order to be effective doing this, you have to fully understand the various scenarios you're going to face, you know, with people and their whether they have spousal benefits, whether they don't.
They're inserting cultural competency.
Yeah, they're inserting this into it, the cultural competency.
They're inserting it into it, right.
Yeah.
Right. A diversity initiative.
Yeah, yeah. Almost kind of normalizing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
And I think it's very shrewd in how they're doing that, actually.
And it says they just serve the district?
I think it is principally the district, but because of the overlap in that jurisdiction with Virginia and Maryland, I don't know whether they're also doing it in the suburbs.
Because I was just thinking, what do those exchanges look like?
Yeah.
Like you're talking three different states and a district? I mean, yeah. God, that's got to be complex.
Really? Yeah, it is.
It's just really hard.
Yeah.
Wow. But I didn't go. We didn't go into all the details of everything they were doing with that. But yeah, although I'm getting a document that describes what they're doing, so I'll be able to report back.
Interesting.
On a lot of this stuff. Anyway, the fifth thing is this. You know, and this goes to your, you know, sort of your going back to your concept of navigation and having some capability of navigating people throughout. Is having some sort of a vehicle or program or clearinghouse that serves as a distribution channel for communicating available services so that they're aware of what's available and can reserve and inquire about community services. And this is something more comprehensive than, you know, probably what a lot of those kind of clearinghouses do now. I know that there's something called the Elder Initiative in Philadelphia that's trying to do that, and they're trying to serve as that function, that central clearinghouse and data bank for all, LGBT-related senior services across, you know, healthcare, housing, everything. And they're developing that. I think the LGBT Center in LA also is sort of putting together a database that sort of would do that kind of thing, and they're doing that function. I always think, you know, whenever I talk to Rebecca Rolf, I always think, you know, that would have been an opportunity for the LGBT Center here to do something that's sort of similar in scope to that.
But there's actually a publication
It goes beyond a publication. It would actually be there'd be hotlines and there'd be all kinds of that. So I'm not getting to, you know, we're not making a recommendation now, but I'm just saying that it would be worth considering that we develop that capability, which I think goes back to your concept of
navigation. And the question I would have is DOS has really tried to position itself as that vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the question I would have, I mean, I don't really have an opinion on it. I have an opinion on one component of it, but someone who may have accessed all the components of that system, whether or not that's sufficient is something for us to, quote, recommend to invest in, or we need a distinct, separate
right.
you know, effort. That's a question I have because I really don't know. I mean, I don't have an opinion on that. I don't know if Molly, you probably may.
Well, they do call it a central clearinghouse.
Yes, they do.
Integrated intake unit.
Yeah.
Intake unit.
But I guess the question I have is from a public policy point of view, do we want to invest on building that infrastructure, or do we need that infrastructure and another, or I don't know. I mean.
It's hard to know the answer to that right now, but one of the things you would look at is you'd want to look at the DAS program and see how well it functions.
Well,
does it address our needs?
I'm on the advisory council to DAS, mm-hmm. and I think it works really well. Mm-hmm. I think we need to look where the gaps are,
yeah.
Rather than reinvent the wheel. And where the wheel exists, we can, if it's squeaky, yes. then we can speak to that. But you
so
know,
does DAS do healthcare?
Does DAS do healthcare?
Healthcare referrals?
Well,
healthcare
insurance.
Referrals.
Yeah,
because this is broader.
They do everything.
They do everything.
And so there's also a private agency, well, a nonprofit, IOA also, mm-hmm. IOA Connect. Their whole thing is connecting everyone. So
yeah.
that's also a parallel resource out in the community. It's a community-based resource. And then.
And does our community
and then we,
use that
know,
service
we do.
Well? You think?
I don't know.
But that would be where we would start.
Yeah, I think we would start there.
But yeah. I think that, you know, it's just like when we did the Alzheimer dementia care, we work to work closely with DAS on whatever recommendations we make so that we're, you know, and actually have a chance for Bill Amram to
mm-hmm.
talk with Ann Hinton about these things so that we're not kind of putting ourselves out there in opposition to DAS, but actually working together with them.
Yeah, see, I'm not coming from at it from that viewpoint at all, Marcy. I think the idea, you know, and this goes to the other thing that I'm working on, which is the enhancing access to existing services. Is,
mm-hmm.
you know, normally in public policy, you wouldn't want to reinvent the wheel if it was functioning. So yeah, if it's, but I do think it's worth a look to just make sure that, you know, we're all comfortable with how it's functioning for our community. And it's not so much oppositional as it is just, you know, evaluating or getting some sense of it, seeing how it works. And then and in the spirit of not reinventing the wheel, saying, you know, they do a pretty good job. I mean, there's some things they don't do as well, but who cares? I mean, they do it pretty well. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think there's a couple of barriers, but anytime you look at the current city, these are just some assumptions I would have. One, the staff needs a lot more training
yeah.
around cultural competence and comfort with dealing with LGBT issues, period. They'll tell you that right up front. They're ready to do it, they
right.
want to do it,
they want to do
but
it.
They just don't have the, they don't feel comfortable with it yet. They just
yeah.
don't. Some people do, but many people don't have the depth of comfort that they want. So that's one. The other is they don't have the information.
Right.
So there isn't, I mean, you would think in this city with all the variety of services that there would be just this easy clearinghouse of information and contact. But by the time you put it together, it's outdated. and it's not, I mean, there isn't someone whose job it is to just keep that stuff going. It's always kind of like that catch-as-catch-can situation.
Right.
And then there's the public part of this that's a problem. Large bodies of people are managed, frankly, by care systems that are used to using this intake center, whether it be social workers, doctors, so forth and so on, agencies like mine. But the general public sees that as the poor people's program that I don't have access to.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's a good point.
And there are a lot of people who fall on the margins or perceive that they don't have access to these systems when in fact they are designed specifically for them.
And I would just want to add, thank you, actually, it was really clear, is, you know, DAS has really been working for some time now to coordinate across all systems so that people have one point of entry, one entry point. Whatever your income,
mm-hmm,
whatever
mm-hmm.
diverse community you come from, so we really want to work with them to enhance that program, because it, you know, coordinated care is really at the end of the day what keeps people healthy and,
mm-hmm.
and keeps them at home.
Right, right.
And they have a whole system. Actually, DAS is one on the cutting edge of coordinated care in the state of California.
Mm-hmm.
They just rolled out their long-term care integration plan, which retooled how that would all work. So yeah, it may not work perfectly, and we may not find our way into it as easily. But it's there for us to use, and we're obligated to insert ourselves in there and make and test it, move it, work it. But there is a system I think that we can plug into.
Thank you, Molly.
And if that's the case, then we can move on to other areas that don't have that, right?
Yeah.
Right.
But I, you know, just in the interest of due diligence, we have to look at all this. You know,
yeah,
just
yeah.
Make sure we
no,
feel
well,
it.
Yeah. No, yeah. Right. I think these are good things you're bringing up, but it's good for us to all know what's out there.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and then I still go back to this perception issue out in the community that people aren't aware that they can call these numbers directly.
Yeah.
You know, I look at one of the things in the city that I think works really well is 311.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
If you're a user and you're a neighborhood person that reports graffiti or things happening in your neighborhood, you know this system works.
Right,
mm-hmm.
Right.
It does.
It totally works. You get a number, you people are trained well. I mean, it's, I have never reported a piece of graffiti anywhere in my neighborhood that wasn't removed in 48 hours, period.
Yeah.
And there's other examples of things you can report that just work really well. And my question is, how do you get the senior services line to be as utilized and as respected as
right.
a 311 line?
Well, you know, this raises the issue is, you know, we do have one of the most forward-thinking departments on aging, and how can we get our community to be more engaged? How can we get in the existing services?
Hmm.
I mean, I really think that's the issue rather than creating something separate.
Yeah.
And I think if we put together a community awareness campaign that covers all the different areas like housing and so forth, this has to be some ongoing kind of, and again, this is where we need to all meet together, all the subgroups. So there's cultural competency training that needs to meet, but also education and awareness about existing programs. For example, it's amazing to me how little people know about Alzheimer's dementia or what you can do to delay it. It's amazing to me how many people even know about 311. So, I mean, the good news is we can do so much. We get such a big bang for our buck out of doing education and cultural competency training.
Yeah.
But we need to really, when we get to the Board of Supes, we really have to have a really rather well thought out strategic plan for both of those.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let me ask you a question then, just again getting back to the clearinghouse concept. I know DOS has a range of services that it administers, okay, and it promotes that knowledge of that, right?
Yes.
It has a media campaign or it does whatever it does. But are there other services that the city provides in other departments that don't have things at that that level of competency, or would you say that when it comes to anything for seniors, DOS is the entity?
What's the area agency on aging across the country that you would call your area agency on aging first? So DOS, as being our area agency on aging, that is the go-to
mm-hmm.
sort of entity that has.
But are you, I guess my question is, do you think of it as
DOS,
comprehensive?
Well,
does it handle comprehensive
well,
range?
Well, DOS receives the money, the state money, right? It's our area agencies. The state gets the money from the federal government, right? It comes to us through them. So they have the funding for anything having to do with seniors.
Mm-hmm. The public funding, but not private.
You're
I mean, what's
about,
the limits?
Yeah,
I mean, because when we're talking about a clearinghouse, we're talking about there are public sector programs, there are nonprofit programs, and there are private sector programs, right? Particularly in healthcare, if you want insurance. Is DOS, though, does DOS, the mandate of DOS, extend to all of those services, no matter what the source of funding is?
I mean, I get your point, no. I mean, at best case scenario is that they would be aware and referring to those systems, but you have to understand that DOS is a mixture, and all area on aging offices on aging are different. Some run all of their own programs. Literally their county programs, et cetera.
Yeah.
Our department tends to be a hybrid of programs run by city staff, but I would my guess is that 2/3 to 3/4 are contracts with agencies, like many of the ones around this table. And then, you know, those things that happen outside of that, you know, they may or may not know about and refer to.
But it sounds like because they do this external contracting to nonprofits, they're going to capture, you know, 80 or 90% of the variance, right, of what's out there, probably.
What we hope. And we hope to expand that. We hope to work closely with us so that they understand our community better, as we understand our community better and can translate it to them.
But there was a recognition that they did not know all of the things, and they have given this grant to Family Service Agency to create this kind of non-traditional support structures that are out in the community, and they were supposed to produce a book, and I think they did.
Oh yeah, the visitor support.
Well, which is basically, can you capture all the assets throughout San Francisco that are there to serve seniors? Whether it be church groups, churches that decide that they're going to transport their church members to doctor's appointments or whatever is out there, you know, to soup kitchens, to grocery bag programs, to you name it, to pharmacy assistance, all of that stuff, to, you know, home visits, etc. And I didn't see that. I went to a meeting about it, but there was a recognition within DOS that there's a lot of informal structures to the city that they're not aware of.
Right. Well, I know at the advisory council level that we were asked to participate, actually, in going out to our different districts to find out what non-city funded programs there are, like in churches or, you know, sometimes it's just a person who gets in their van and hands out sandwiches.
Yep.
And actually, that's a fairly good part of how seniors get taken care of in this city, is that kind of, and there's nobody documenting it yet. So it is still a work in progress.
Yep.
But at least it's good that they're doing that.
Oh, yeah.
To expand their knowledge base of what's available.
And then also, DOS did give money to the villages, because they recognize, you know, that LGBT, well, not LGBT, but seniors are across, you know, income, so.
Right.
Well, it seems as if we kind of agree to the overarching goals and the five areas of recommendations could scope. How do we go from here and kind of out to our assignment so we can come back at a future date and actually have more information under each one of these things? At question A and question B, what's missing?
Okay, the one thing that and we're almost ready. It's a great. You turn the page, I guess, to the fat. But before we go to the second page, I'd like to just for a minute linger on the notion of, in our recommendations, building in where it's feasible, a requirement for evaluation. So if we're making a programmatic recommendation toward a new service area or something, that we build in some measurement, you know, measures, some goals and measurement measures that will actually allow us to assess the program. So it's sort of a classic program evaluation. I don't know how often that's done here, you know, and as a standard issue in San Francisco and programs, but it would be good, and this is just the public policy guy me, it'd be good if we try to build in some evaluative measures just to see how we're doing, you know, into the program. Does that sound like a good idea?
I'm curious, though, if that's usually done at the RFP level.
Yes,
you know, that's usually done when the proposal is put out there that...
But that's only when you don't have public policy. When you don't have the vision at the people who are issuing the RFP to know what they want to have accomplished. So, because then you can say, at a minimum, we want this, that, and the other thing. You tell us how you're going to do it. And the RFP is to, you know, we want to lower. I don't know. Let's say jail recidiveness 10%. And we're putting an RFP, you know, for juvenile jail recidivists. Okay, I'll do this because they're doing this around the country in different places. And you want to bid on our program. We have money for you to help to reduce juvenile jail recidivism. Mm-hmm. But we want it done by, you know, 10% per year for, you know, over this time frame. And then you specify that in the RFP, and then it's up to the people responding to tell you how they're going to do it. But you're always directing it. So the analog here is simply saying, you know, we'd like something to happen, but here's what we'd like to see happen, and we'd like to build in some measures, you know, in these programs that allow you to monitor and evaluate the program as time goes by. And it's just a classic program evaluation sort of approach.
I feel like, though, DOS would have a whole team of evaluators in there that actually...
It's called the planning department.
Yeah,
right, but they're specifying the methodology for how you do it. You're specifying the goals for what you want to see, because we're the community. We can specify what we want to see happen. You know, we want, you know, the equivalent, and we're making these recommendations. Again, this is us. We're the visionaries. We're making the recommendations and saying this is what we think. Here's the gaps. Here's an approach to dealing with the gaps we recommend. here's what we'd like to see happen as an ultimate outcome. And it could be labeled a wish list,
and some items you could, if we had the items in front of us now, we could go through, and some of those would be so easy to put a metric or an outcome next to, and some would be like, you know, I don't really know what an outcome would be for this, but we did need to do it.
So I guess
my response to your question is yes, I'm supportive of doing that, but understanding that there are certain things that just will not lend themselves very easily or readily to that.
So
at
this
stage,
if we said that we supported, and I just want to run this by you, we support the idea of a program evaluation wherever possible and feasible.
I think that's a good idea. Can I add one more thing, Michael,
to
go back to what I was saying before? I'm a little concerned, having spoken to, I think it was Diana who said, you know, Jensen, if you come to the Board of Supes, and it isn't, what is it that's unique about our community that we're asking specifically for this help? I mean, when I read this, then I think this would be true for all of us, for all San Franciscans. And so again, to really hit home whenever you can, why we need this, why we as a community have special needs.
And that can be an embedded value as we think through in our areas what we're making in terms of specific recommendations.
Well, for example, our vulnerability to isolation and so on, those things. So they just have it be really clear.
I
agree with that, too. In my mind, it's implied that we need to make that case.
Right.
And we need to, when we get down to a really kind of drill home why this is amplified, why is the dial turned up on this?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Why should they fund anything we're recommending when if the whole city needs it?
Right. Why is this recommendation different from all our other recommendations?
Yes.
Okay. So, we kind of okay with all this so far?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. So now it comes to, now we have to do, assign some responsibilities for each of these buckets. Critique it. I just took a first crack at assigning it to people. So I, for social and educational services, I had Kaushik and Molly. But it may be something, Michelle, you want to be involved in. But this is just the first cut. Housing is obviously Tommy. Healthcare is obviously, and I've already kind of talked to him about it. He isn't participating in our meetings here, but he needs to be involved because housing is, in many senses, it's one of the primary problems for aging.
Well, it's an anchor. If you don't have housing, your access to services are pretty poor.
Yeah. And then healthcare, I want to do it. If you want to get involved in the question of whether you want to get involved in aging in place around mental health issues, you're going to be more than welcome to join. And then we then I struggled a little bit with income assistance programs and employment training. There are a lot of people who are older who want to get trained. And so it's not just having access to existing benefit or assistance programs, it's also generating the wherewithal to actually get a job in a changing world. I just don't know, who the best person would be to do that. So it was a question mark.
This is a really interesting area.
And do we want to get into that area?
Our senior services system is set up right now to serve people who, quote, shouldn't be working, honestly. I mean, to be candid with you, but there's just the bulk of people that are being forced out of the city who are LGBT folks, first because of housing, but secondarily because they just can't afford to stay here.
Right.
Yeah. They need to have more income. To be able to stay here, and they desperately want to do that. But imagine, these days trying to get a job after 50 is hard, and imagine being 60 with limited skills,
right?
Mm-hmm. Or with outdated skills. So it's a little hidden crisis, I think, in terms of keeping people in community.
Right.
But I just don't know exactly what to do about that, because there really aren't very many good senior employment programs at the level and at the funding that would help people actually get gainful employment.
Right. See, and this is where I was hoping you were going to say, actually, oh, yes, but there's this wonderful program that somebody does. We don't have to get involved
in it. Family Service Agency has the contract, the federal contract, which is the elder employment program, and generally works this way. You've got people who need work, and they place them in organizations like mine for a short period of time, and they pay the $12 per hour or whatever it is, and then at some point in time, the expectation is you realize how invaluable or how much you can't go without these people now, and you start putting them on your budget and you employ them. And I actually do have someone on my staff who's came to us that way, and I, you know, I've continued to employ this person, regardless of whether or not it's the best use of those funds or not, because I just really am committed to this person.
Right.
But, you know, it's a challenge because most agencies don't. They take the free staffing and then these people are out, you know, at the end of that thing because they don't have the budget to sustain those jobs.
Right.
That's really kind of how the one that works now.
Yeah.
And then there's the opposite end of the spectrum, which is people who really just want to use their time valuably but don't get paid. They're really just, you know, skilled volunteers.
Right.
But that's not what really what we're talking about here. We're talking about people who literally need some extra income.
Right. And to some extent, where there are existing income supports programs, that other initiative that we talked about, you know, last time, which is really enhancing access to these things, that will address this issue. But it's not going to be as, you know, comprehensive as it could be when you really get into talking about employment. So I don't know whether you want to kind of leave it on the fence now and
I'll try to take it to another level and talk to the Family Service Agency and see what recommendations they have and maybe talking with DOS about this issue. I don't see that they have this on their radar screen so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Do you?
This is a tough nut to crack.
Yeah, because people slip away and they leave the city and you don't have to deal with them anymore.
And, you know, it's kind of interesting because I included it because I thought if we were going to be comprehensive about aging in the community, we should at least address the issue. But it's perfectly legitimate that there may be some things that are beyond the scope of what we can do, and we just acknowledge it, you know.
But if you imagine how much money is spent both directly and through edict to employ people in the city, whether they be quotas around construction hiring, there's a lot being done in the city to foster job creation. What's being done to foster job creation for people in this kind of category of need? I would say very little compared to the big picture. So, I mean, it wouldn't hurt to push this on the radar screen.
Yeah.
So at least those large amounts of dollars that are employing large numbers of people in the city and this government to be job creators should also consider this population. That's mm-hmm. the minimum.
It sort of borders on the homeless issue here.
Yep.
I mean, on the extreme.
Well, one of our recommendations eventually at the end of the day would be that, you know, this is, we could outline the magnitude of the issue and then say, you know, this is something that should be considered.
I will sign my name next to that, but keep going down the list.
So, we're on the flip side, the back. Well, I guess you can't tell which is the front and the back, but the one that says focus areas.
And we've committed you to do lots of things. We'll tell you.
What's right there? Yeah. For that. Thank you. Oh. I knew you were looking out for me.
I always do.
Oh yeah, Tom. It's it makes great bedside reading. Then getting to food, we haven't really talked about food services, have we, in any of this?
We call it nutrition instead.
Or nutrition, or, yeah, I'm sorry.
I know.
I'm just a Neanderthal. Food. There was going to be a sex and a drink section, but but, you know, do we want to get involved in that?
Well, I mean, the question I have, obviously the city already has a fairly comprehensive nutrition system, both in the 50-plus funded meal sites mm-hmm. across the city. Of course, there's an equal amount of dollars going into home-delivered meals, and there's an expanding, kind of an emerging understanding that some people need groceries, and there's systems being put in place to do that in cooperation with the food bank and with some churches. There's a couple of communities across the town, predominantly OMI and some parts of the Richmond, that are considered underserviced areas where there may not be a congregate site, or there may not be, at least the city believes that those are areas that are currently underserved.
Right.
I just don't understand, I'm trying to evaluate what is unique, and what is the LGBT uniqueness of this?
Well, and if there isn't, that would be an argument to say, no, we won't address this issue.
We could point to the study, which I think showed there wasn't really a need for...
Well, that people tend to, you know, well, there was a mention that people could use help with groceries, right?
They could use help with groceries, but in terms of receiving meals at home, or going to meal sites, not so much.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just not an issue for our community.
And that's fine to
probably more of an issue in terms of socialization than... On the other hand, sometimes you build it and then people see their need. You know, there really could be more offered, this LGBT specific.
But it doesn't jump out at anybody, I think, which is a good thing.
Yeah. So we can, for the moment, can we take that off the table?
We could in terms of, you know, or just, I think it, the thing I'm really concerned about is that all providers in the nutrition field become more adept and trained to make this population feel welcome, because in fact one of the weaknesses, if you consider the nutrition bucket, is that people did rank community centers, senior centers, congregate meal sites very low,
right,
on the favorable or friendly,
right,
mark. And the question I had back to that was not, was, is that a staffing site issue, or is that the fact that the people that they go and eat with are not friendly?
Right.
You know, because seniors can be quite mean.
Right.
You know, they sit with people they know, and they don't sit with people they don't know, and they're just like kids in a high school cafeteria.
Right.
So you don't know whether or not that environment is being welcoming or not. So that's
I don't know that it's particular to seniors.
People in general like
people
the
in general like
affinity.
Yeah.
Well, actually, how are the congregate sites doing, actually? For a while, I know it was a struggle to keep up the census in these places. Has that changed?
I think
it's across the board.
Well, it did change, actually. At one of the meetings at the advisory council, during the recession, the beginning of the recession, it ticked up.
Mm-hmm.
And there were more people going, but it had been going down, steadily down. And now it's going down again a little bit. So, you know, it just depends on the economy.
Right.
But there's, you know, there's so many inexpensive restaurants in San Francisco, you know, that if you have a little bit of money, you can find a fairly decent...
And the food trucks.
Yeah, and the food trucks, you can get a fairly decent meal.
I think it depends on the center and the food being served, honestly. From what I've been hearing is that, well, they have good food here, and I've seen it.
On that day or on this day, and people do move around.
Or they make their own food at that center, so that automatically is much more appealing than where they get it, you know, shipped in from.
Right, and we're a very diverse community, and so there isn't a particular queer meal.
Yeah.
That I know of. So there's, you know, seriously, so there may be, you know, I know that there's a group of...
What would that be?
I'm a queer meal.
Would that involve a martini?
It might be a martini. Called the Castro Lunch Special.
Sure.
But because we're such a diverse community in terms of race and ethnicity, I think that splinters us. Food is about... often connected to race and ethnicity more than it is to sexual orientation, is what I'm trying to say.
Very much so. Very much so.
It's a funny way to
say it.
The LGBT friendly meal.
I wonder about the whole model of those things, though. You know, the whole model of the
senior centers,
the kind of sites.
Well,
as opposed to groceries or the periodic things, not daily things. I mean, some of the centers, some of the project up in Hanhead, 15, 20 people a day would come to them, and the Office on Aging would say, you know, you got to get 25 or 30, whatever you want to get.
Yeah.
And it was hard. I mean, do creative things to get. So.
At the grocery center?
No, at the meal sites.
Meal sites. And one of the problems I always had, because when I first came to Meals on Wheels, and this was before the 2008 drop, and they asked for ideas, and we were running one of the largest congregate meal sites, and it had about 125 people. Added a day, and I suggested that we would close that site and migrate these seniors to what was really six other sites within three blocks.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that was a better deployment of funds. And one of the reasons I did that is not because I didn't think we were doing a good job, or not the fact that we were subsidizing it heavily, which we were, was because I didn't think it was a good senior center. as a program, I thought that we're better off to have fewer of these places, but have real staffing and real people running quality programs, and that just having someone sit for 2 hours, you know, 15 people, is probably not the best setup. But that's a big conversation to kind of build better centers rather than sites.
And the age groups, the age differences too. I would think it'd be, that's probably something if you're 70 or 80 going, why don't you 60 or...
Right, and using the gym equipment, for example, versus a site that doesn't have that kind of, those kinds of activities.
Or having an art program, or having a book group, or having anything that gets people active and keeping...
Talking to each other.
Talking to each other and mentally active, because, I mean, as much as the food is essential, the getting people out of their homes for as long as possible and for as long as it's safe is the best thing we can do to help people age in community, is not have them be isolated, because isolation is a killer.
Well, I think what you're speaking to is that for so long everything was siloed. All the programs were siloed. Right. And now, again, here we have, again, this idea of coordinated care, even on a basic thing like nutrition sites. And I think that really is... Where the work has to go.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, I think it's worth keeping it around, but I don't know that there's any LGBT specific food recommendation that I can think of right now.
Queer spinach or something like that.
Spinach. There you go. Go ahead.
Okay. So the next area is probably an example. I want to use the legal area as an example of how this thing could be done easily by people who are charged with each of these areas. So for Daniel, since he's our legal beagle, I would just say those recommendations that he's already working on, that he's making, that may relate to aging in place or facilitate aging in place, that be incorporated in our aging in place recommendations. I haven't talked to him about this yet, though, so it may be that, in fact, that if I talk to him and say, well, we have this aging in place focus, do your recommendations speak directly to that? And he may say, well, no. I mean, I'm not saying they don't, but, and then that may get him to think a little bit more about that. But that it is a dimension that's worth including in this, because if you really want to do a comprehensive approach, you want to look at any sort of changes in legal policy or whatever that would facilitate that. So, but I want to use this as an example about how everybody has their own responsibilities right now in their own areas, and as much as possible, it would be good not to add on more work to anyone else, but just for people as they generate response, their recommendations, and whether it's housing or social services or whatever, that they just keep in mind, what are these things, do these recommendations, any of them speak to aging in place, and if so, how, and then we can incorporate those.
And I'm going to, we're going to have to correct your aging community.
Aging community, right?
Well,
should this be a separate issue, or should it be...
what do you mean?
Aging and community, or should it actually, each subgroup speak to it themselves rather than have it be separate? I'm not as...
Oh, no, I would rather have it grow organically from what everyone's doing at their own level, and we just use this as a consolidator, and we just say in the area of aging in place, these are the recommendations the task force is making that relate specifically to aging in place.
So it's not its own set of new recommendations.
It doesn't have to be.
Well, I don't think I actually don't think it should be.
Right.
Yeah, no, I don't think it has to be either.
I think the example you gave with Daniel is actually true for some of these other ones as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just listening to our conversation, the cultural competency obviously is one of them, which is already happening.
Right.
And the other one about reducing social isolation, which is the big other big recommendation. Okay, so that helps me in terms of, I don't think it should, I wasn't quite clear about that when we were talking about
this. I wanted to make this very clear, because otherwise it just seems like more work for everybody, and it isn't.
Well, I really appreciate that, because, when dealing with Alzheimer's dementia, it has to be about aging in place and aging in community. And I actually think we make all our recommendations and all the subcommittees stronger if this is built into each committee.
Yeah.
So I'm not quite sure then how to utilize...
Well, I think in the report, in the final report, you can see where this is going. You actually have an aging in place section, and you sort of deal with this so that it's top of mind to everybody. These are the recommendations that deal specifically with aging in place, rather than have them all separate, and where you have a sentence or two within that different recommendation area saying, oh, by the way, this is going to help aging in place.
You know, I think this is wonderful, Michael. I guess my concern is I feel like in some way all of the subgroups are either directly or indirectly kind of focusing, I mean, on aging in community.
Yeah, but
unless I'm
aging in community, yes.
Yeah.
So I'm not really clear.
Well, no, but I'm going to be making some medical case management recommendations that aren't included anywhere else.
And regarding aging in the community.
Yeah, regarding aging in place. And I have a feeling that there may be different sort of that in other places too. But the whole thing is, this is a subject matter area. Think about this in terms of the final report. So we have a subject matter area called one of the leading issues, you know, we think as a task force is important is facilitating and promoting aging in place. And
community.
These are aging and community.
We'll keep reminding each other.
Yeah, keep telling me, okay, I'll get it one of these days. And these are the things that do that. That's all.
Yeah. The way I kind of see this playing out is that there are these big buckets that are so important, we're keeping them separate and distinct for conversation and really delineation and build out. And then at some point in time, all of the committees, including all the recommendations from our committee, will come into one place and people will begin to see that some of this needs to be collapsed.
Right.
And then some of it is still pronounced enough and important enough as an LGBT specific thing, even though it could fit neatly under a heading and with a bow, it's so important to keep it separate because it's called out. And that's kind of the way I look at it,
right,
is that certain things will fit neatly under topic areas once we put them all in the middle of the table. And certain things you'll want to argue to say, you know, in this particular report, this is such a pronounced issue that it needs to be distinct and it needs to be amplified, basically, as a separate recommendation.
Right.
Which would then fall into the category of aging in place.
Yes.
Or aging in community.
Possibly. And
think about it as a series of recommendations which stand alone because they may be important individually. But if you really start talking about having a comprehensive or a coordinated program across subject matter areas, you get to this.
Mm-hmm. Well, you get to this, right. Which is really what DAS is doing. Is what I'm saying, and so we want to integrate ourselves again.
Well, that's a specific, the content of the recommendation. Maybe we want to work more. We want DAS. You know, we'll do cultural competency training at DAS or something, because they already do everything else.
Right.
Something like that. But that's the end. That's the end point. That's down the line. But does it make sense now? That more sense. Yeah, we can talk more about
sure,
it later.
Sure, we can. I mean, maybe I should flesh it out a little bit more and write something up. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, let's talk. We'll talk more about it, too, because I feel like we're spending a lot of time.
So, Michael, it seems to me, it's kind of obvious that the purpose of what we're doing is to age in community so that that as we age, we don't have to be hidden, isolated, and have to leave the community that we've lived in.
Yep.
And so it seems like everything sort of comes back to that basic premise, right?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, in healthcare, for example, we may want to make a series of recommendations that relate to provision of inpatient healthcare services or something. And that has nothing to do with aging.
Do you have something
plus
in mind? I'm sorry.
No, I'm but what we're all doing, that's a high, well, she's, mm-hmm. That's just a hypothetical example, mm-hmm. but this just makes it explicit,
Okay. Very
explicit, because one of the tendencies many reports do, especially when people are working in their own subject matter areas, mm-hmm. is you get a lot of separate recommendations, uh-huh. but the big picture gets missed.
Uh-huh.
This is where it all comes together, mm-hmm. around aging in place is the reason why we're making all of these recommendations is because of aging in place. So this may actually get collapsed into a mini chapter or something in the final report.
Well, it's something that, well, maybe we'll talk offline, because it just seems to me that this is already what you know, the city's been trying to do now for over a decade, and I want to call it that, aging in place. And so I just want to keep
aging in community.
Aging in community, to make sure that it's really, you know, up to date with what's happening and so forth. So we could talk.
Well, and also I do, you know, I don't believe that we're the be and all and end all of knowledge.
Yep.
Here in San Francisco, so I do want to incorporate, you know, I have an inherent interest in incorporating what's going on elsewhere, you know, and that's good too. And so we can reference, I hope in our recommendations, we can reference the fact that there is intelligent life outside the city limits.
Was this something?
No, I mean, I think that it's good to have a reference to a current program in place, but there may be other knowledge-based things we can learn from other people that we'll want to incorporate in our recommendations.
I think for me that, you know, everyone's mind and process works differently. You know, for me, I still think that we're in the expansion phase of ideas. And we're trying to test and shine lights on everything to make sure that we've talked about it, brought it into the light, put it out there, and then that when we get it together on the paper, eventually it'll become very obvious how to organize it.
Yeah.
It will become very obvious what's already been done and what doesn't need to be said any further. Mm-hmm. And it'll be very obvious the new learnings that are there and what the low-hanging fruit is. So I guess I don't get very vested in the final report right now, because I still think that we need to, as a group, make sure that we've asked every question we want to ask. And then in the end, all this stuff obviously comes together. But I agree with you, at some point in time, it can't be just kind of like this hodgepodge of things that are not really thoughtfully put together.
Well,
I don't think that's where we'll end up.
No, and I'll reference, and I'll be very clear about that, is when I looked at the report that came out in 2003 that made a laundry list of recommendations, many which were inherently overlapping semantically, and it was just a big laundry list, I thought, you know, that's not the kind of thing we want to produce. Bunch of separate recommendations that have no coherence, you know, and they don't really relate. And one of the organizing principles in this is clearly aging in place.
Aging in community.
this is our Achilles heel.
Aging in community. Okay, I'll get that right. Can you text me like every hour and just
community
aging in community.
So we need to kind of wrap up.
Yeah, and I'm sorry this is taking longer, but do people feel comfortable with their subject matter areas? Because it was intended to relate to what you were always doing.
Yeah. Not me.
Okay.
And then, I mean, this kind of is clarified in the question in terms of whether or not this would have been specific recommendations, because my guess is that the majority of the recommendations, I think aging in community, if we were to make one recommendation, it'd be aging in community is ideal.
Right.
I think the majority of recommendations will lead to that. But I included, I think everyone got the handout. This was something we talked about as a group earlier in terms of looking at emotional and practical support, RFP.
Actually, I don't.
It was passed around, I think. Mm-hmm. Should have been.
There were two pages when you grabbed it earlier. One that says recommendation for emotional and practical support.
Did you get this one?
I got it.
Oh, no, I didn't get this one. Okay. Did you get it?
Thanks, Ash.
So based on this is actually something that Molly and I were talking about earlier when we were looking at it in the prism of the social education services, and Michelle and I have talked a lot about this as well, but this is kind of in writing what we had talked about in a few meetings ago in terms of a cost-effective model that would really focus on social or decreasing social isolation and increasing quality of life. So actually being wary of our time, if people want to look at this offline and let me know, that's fine, but this is just kind of a general idea. But I think one of the recommendations should be an RFP around this idea, especially since we can justify that it's much more cost-effective than a lot of other options that have been out there.
And it's intergenerational.
It could be. Tackles the idea of social isolation in so many different ways, especially in this kind of community.
So then this is a draft recommendation in the area?
It is now, yeah, I guess. Vetting bias
or something.
I had done this earlier when we were having those conversations less formally. And then I wasn't quite sure exactly how it fit into your document in this conversation. So now it looks like that conversation's gotten to a point where this can be a draft recommendation. Okay. Or there's still details to be put in.
It could be that the first bullet and the last bullet could be combined, right?
First bullet and last bullet?
You're looking at Michael's.
Which one? Right?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
but
okay, yeah,
I mean in terms of your assignment.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
from what?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
From what this proposal comes, is it clearly navigation,
right?
As well as support.
Yeah.
Now,
What is not clear to me is educational services. We didn't really tackle that.
Well, that's actually training people to do something that they could get a job from. So that's, you know, that could be programming, you know, in our area, internet, some related sort of thing. It exists in
our LLI, you know, lifelong learning.
Yeah.
But that goes back to your question about people who might actually, you know, learn something that would help them get employed and help them get a job.
Sheik, this is great. Couldn't this be a model, though? I mean, I haven't read it all through, but why limit it to HIV, people living with HIV?
We're not.
Oh.
It's basing it on a program. It's basing it on a contract. That's a Ryan White contract.
I get it. Because this would be great for...
all disabilities.
Oh, yeah, no,
That's a model that would be adapted to
really
seniors.
Yeah. So, yeah. And that was one of the things where we started talking about how are we going to ask for funding and justify it.
Uh-huh.
Within this landscape of Ryan White, it is the second most cost-effective Ryan White contract in San Francisco, next to only food.
Uh-huh.
So it's the most cost-effective.
Right. So then this becomes a model, really, for looking at a whole range of recommendations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it tackles all the different aspects of social isolation in the context of this committee or the broader task force.
Right.
So I'm just putting that out there for thoughts and feedback. And if we want to move forward in terms of using this to create one of the recommendations,
mm-hmm.
Molly and I were talking about it, and I think, I don't want to speak for her, but I think we thought this was the right track in terms of doing something like this. Yeah.
I think it's great. I was just looking at it really quickly here. I see a peer support volunteer. Could that be more than one volunteer that works with each person?
Uh-huh.
Sure.
Yeah.
And one of the things we might want to look at is that what if we, because this is really kind of a more structured, cohesive model of family visiting. In some ways. I mean, you know, it's basically taking, we have like three different tiers of volunteer support in our organization, and this is basically taking those things, bringing them together, and adding another level of skill training on top of the volunteers and having people move to a different level of engagement. So it'd be interesting to see how not only to establish distinct programs, but also how to build some of these concepts into existing programs as well.
I think Open House is a pilot program that's somewhat similar to this, doesn't it? Isn't it similar?
Yeah, we have a family visitor program.
Yeah,
right.
But this is a little bit more intense. If I'm reading this very quickly, these are people that have very deep training on navigation.
Well, there's two components to it. So, and again, we can have another conversation next time we meet so people can look at it.
Because
The recommendation is that you need staff who are called care navigators who work with clients, and those clients also have volunteers as needed.
Okay.
So in other words, if you're a client of this program, you're not just relying on a volunteer who, let's be honest, could flake or move away or what have you. You actually also have someone who's trained in navigation.
And so that's the one person that stays with you.
In this case, it would be our 12 social workers. They're the navigators for our clients.
Right, which is what Open House does.
That's what Open House does now.
So I'm curious, in terms of this RFP, though, you guys, I'm wondering how, Scott, just reading this, how close it is to the CBHS RFP that just got sent out?
It's a balance of, you need staff, every client needs some staff connection, but the volunteers play a much larger role than in a lot of other programs.
Is this similar to what Shante already does in some kind of way?
It's the emotional and practical support that Ryan White has been awarded to Shante in the past, and currently.
So it's based on that model?
It's based on that contract, yeah. Right. Yeah.
And we're using this just as a framework, or you're...
However we want to.
Okay.
I just wanted to put something on paper so we can... Because we talked about decreasing social isolation and using peer support volunteers, and this is a way to do it.
Yeah.
We can just say, you know, DOS or DPH or whoever it is should put out an RFP for 3 years for this much to hire 4 people. And this is, and I have the deliver us TBD because we can talk about that in terms of like hours of volunteer support that clients receive, hours of staff support that clients receive, and hours of staff support that volunteers receive.
And when you say disabilities, just to add one more thing.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to consider mental health disability.
Uh-huh.
Like if someone has like a certain amount, say they've had three months, say, of depression,
yeah,
they could qualify for this they'd qualify for this program. Would that work?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think, I mean, let me look at, I haven't looked at this. The goal of this contract is to decrease isolation and improve the quality of life of LGBT aging adults living by themselves who are isolated, low income, underserved, and or have other needs. So.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So then do you anticipate actually then kind of amending this or editing it to fit that format that we're following for recommendations?
Yeah.
So that's great.
You mean the general one?
The one with the problem recommendation.
Yeah. This was, I drafted this before
solution.
That stuff came out.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
I can.
Okay, because that'll be helpful because in that way we can.
But I mean, you know, this is the larger recommendation of how do you tackle this huge problem of isolation.
How do we distinguish for those folks who are middle income, who are isolated and underserved and have greater needs?
Or do we want to, this is not targeted, we don't have to make it targeted to low income.
Not at all,
right?
we can eliminate that word altogether.
Yeah.
So isolated, underserved.
But can you have a program that's inclusive like that, or do you need two separate programs?
I think it's best to have one program that's inclusive. I mean, the way we look at it, the way I kind of figure is, and I don't know if it can be this broad just in terms of how much money would be available for funding, but if you're LGBT identified, you're over the age of 60, and you need support, or you're either at risk or are isolated, this is a way for you to avoid becoming further isolated or becoming isolated.
So the issue is, and people aren't going to have to pay for this program, right? So you wouldn't have to have an income-based assessment, but you could sort of assess level of intensity of need based on
and then
base your staffing or your resource use based on that.
And that's another reason why you need staff involvement in addition to volunteers, because there's some clients who may not be appropriate for volunteer support.
Well, and that's the biggest concern I have when you start going into some of the clinical issues, is that it's to a large degree very tricky to match volunteers with people with both health and mental health challenges. Sometimes
you can't.
But there is a specific program that does that.
What?
It's called senior peer counseling, and it used to be at FSA, and they got subsumed because they don't have any funding for it anymore.
Yeah.
And now it's under foster grandparent and senior companion program. But it used to be funded, and they have a program in San Mateo County. At Peninsula Family Service, that's an LGBT senior peer counseling, and they go through rural, like 9 weeks of intense training to be peer counselor. They do use the term peer counselor.
For more in-depth challenging.
Mental health,
Yeah.
Well, it's almost a triage. I mean, you know, there are people that literally don't need a lot of, quote, staff supervision that can be matched with a volunteer very readily, and then you move into people who need management and a real, you know, trained volunteer, and then there are people who need just almost skilled volunteerism.
Or skilled.
So this is great on several levels. One, it's not really providing the service that they need, it's helping them get to the services that they need.
Or especially for more severe needs. Yeah.
Right, as people need more and more services.
Yeah.
So it's really helpful in that way. And this really fits into our unique demographics about why we need something like this, because we'd again, you know, that we're living alone and we don't have children. And I think that this is a wonderful, it's just wonderful, Kashik. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. So, Tom told us we had to finish it 6 minutes ago. So, quick question. Are we queued up to carry the aging community assignments forward?
Well, so my understanding from our conversation is that people will be developing their recommendations for their subject matter areas. keeping in mind the idea that, you know, is this something that relates to aging in place or not?
Yep. Okay.
And then
community.
Generating anything that might be truly aging in place.
Yeah. What?
Community.
Communities.
It's like a
isn't that what I said?
Oh my
you
God.
Said
God.
Yeah.
You're
going to
be
having
nightmares
about
this.
You're going to correct that in the minutes, though.
I might have to write something for these guys.
Before everyone leaves,
I think
we're in good shape. I think people will come back. You've got the subject matter areas, and we'll keep moving this forward. Thanks for introducing things. We need to pick some dates for meetings before people start growling out of here.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. December 24th was
December
24th.
Just make that a 3-hour
meeting.
But see, that's fine with
me.
Might
just do two. You probably have one on New Year's.
Scrooge.
Right.
There's some Scrooge.
All right.
Okay, so what?
We have been doing, in the past, we have been meeting on the fourth Thursday of the month.
Tuesday.
Of the Tuesday of the month, sorry. And so if we were to look at the next fourth Tuesday in November would be the 26th.
26th.
It's 2 days after Thanksgiving, if people are going out of town.
Now, for some reason, I thought the full task force had chosen.
Yeah, I got it down.
But they canceled it.
No, they canceled.
Yeah, they said, did you get the
They changed it.
So do we want to take that date?
Yeah.
Because I think we're not meeting as a full task force in November, right?
No, that was October.
So question, now that we're extended to March, when do we start actually presenting recommendations to the full task force?
I think we're going to start at our next meeting to start bringing things forward.
Twelfth of November.
Also, very 12th.
46 actually.
So 46 on the 26th? Can everyone do that?
Okay.
Subcommittee.
Okay.
So.
Subcommittee, right. I didn't know what to say.
The full task force on the 12th.
Yeah.
And then the next full task force meeting is December 10th.
Oh, December 10th is the full task force?
I don't think they'll change that.
No.
Yes, I think it's the 10th.
Is there anything in November?
I don't think it's canceled.
I don't think
so. Until 12th of November is the full task force.
So November 26th, Tuesday here, is that possible?
When? Say that again.
Do you know?
Oh, sorry.
Is that possible to be here?
No problem.
November what?
26th.
Oh, I have that.
For the subcommittee. How do people feel about the 17th of December as a subcommittee meeting? So we meet once in December. That's fine.
Hold on, let me look.
It's good with me.
I would vote against the 24th as I'm thinking others would as well.
I can't do it that day.
You can't do the 17th.
Oh, you can't do the 24th in November?
No, I can do the 17th.
December.
December. Oh, no, of course we can't do the 24th.
I could do the 17th.
Yeah.
I can do the 17th.
Sure. The task force had hired Scrooge to do scheduling, I think.
I guess, right?
Subcommittee.
4 to 6.
Is that okay?
Well, I just won't be able to make it. I have a staff call.
Can someone do maybe the 6th? Is there like the 16th or 18th that everyone can do just to see if Molly can make it?
What day?
What day?
Either the December 16th or December 18th, which is Monday or Wednesday of that same.
I can do December 6th.
What about Monday the 16th?
Monday's the 16th? I can't do it.
What about the 19th?
Oh.
The 19th? I could do the 19th.
How do people feel about the 19th?
19th?
I can do the 19th.
Okay, 19th. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
4 o'clock?
Yeah.
So then the two additional meetings are 4 to 6 on November 26th and 4 to 6 on December 19th?
Yes, mm-hmm. I believe
yes.
so.
Great.
Oh my goodness.
Work done, Mr. Chairman.
Is that it, sir?
Hold on. we're going to table the caregivers discussion. We picked our schedule. Any new or old business?
No.
Any announcements?
No.
We're done.
Oh, wait. There is a Social Security event
the 24th.
On October 30th at the LGBT Community Center. And there's over 12 nonprofit organizations that are co-sponsors, including DOS. And the HRC, and it's Social Security and the LGBT community, and I hope you can tell everybody to come.
Yeah. I'll be sure to forward on that flyer.
Is that the one with Chip Conley, or is that something?
No, that's not something.
Get all confused.
Always.
That's just a good
thing.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
I'm co-hosting a table, by the way.
Joel got texted me.
Bless you.
Email me.